Good morning, Cowboys Nation, and happy Tuesday to all of you. Welcome back to another episode of The Writer's Block. I am your host, David Howman, joined by Brandon Clements, who was not here last week when it was just me and Chris Holling hanging out and agreeing for a little bit and then disagreeing very, very hard on the topics that we discussed. This week, Brandon is back, and we're very happy to have him. But with him coming back, Chris is now not here. So it's like, you know, we're playing
revolving door.
Revolving door. There we go. I couldn't figure it out. So Brandon, you've already helped me out by being back here and being able to figure out the word I was looking for. But yes, it's a revolving door from last week to this week. One of these days, we're going to have the Holy Trinity back together, all three of us on the writer's block. But for today, we have a good show for you. Me and Brandon talking all things Cowboys. And we're going to be breaking down the NFC East now that we've kind of seen the draft, some undrafted free agency, some of the free agency that happens after the draft. We have a general idea of what these four teams are going to look like, and we're going to tell you how they're going to finish and maybe not make hard, solid predictions, but pretty darn close to it. But before we get into all that, Brandon, how are you doing? Are you glad to be back? And are you excited to like fire off some takes and not have Chris here to rebut them?
Oh, dude. First and foremost, thanks for holding down the fort. I mean, you're the mainstay. Like, you know, Chris and I have been flip-flopping the last couple of weeks. So, and, you know, Howman's been the steady guide here, he's been steadying the ship for us. And I'm glad to be back, you know, feeling much better. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes the things kind of kick you in the rear end, but I am good to go. And unfortunately, Chris isn't here tonight to, talk up particular receivers. Which I know we're going to get to that in a little bit, but yeah, it's Chris and I are very different on where we feel the receiver position is going to go. So I'm going to miss that a little bit tonight, but you know, you and I don't always see eye to eye. So it's always a fun dynamic between the two of us. So I'm ready to get going. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to have some hot takes. You know, that's what I do, hot takes. But like some of my hot takes, they're aging pretty well right now. I know it's early on, but some of those takes, they're aging pretty well.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you definitely have had a couple of hot takes here and there. But some of them have turned out to be, you know, quite accurate. And to be fair, your Dak Prescott take last year of, what was it? It was 5,000 yards, 40 touchdowns, single-digit interceptions.
I came close. I got one out of three, but the other two were close.
You came close. And if you give Dak like that week one where they played in like a monsoon, if that's a normal week, and then like if he does anything in the 49ers game, like you probably would have hit it to your
credit. Yeah, no, I definitely would have hit it. Like that's how confident I was. And here's the other thing too that a lot of people forget. There were some games where because of game flow and just game management, like the Cowboys got up to a big lead and they didn't have to pass. Like they could just lean on the run and just, you know, hand the ball off to our Tony Pollard and company. And they didn't, Dak didn't have to do any, you know, do too much. So in a lot of those situations, that's kind of what happened. And I'll just say if it was normal situations, like you mentioned, or maybe a few more closer games, I think 5,000 would have happened. But I am very happy about the one particular stat that I crushed. Yes, I crushed barely, but he threw single digit interceptions last year. So I'm tipping my cap to myself for that one because a lot of people thought that wasn't going to happen. So I'm glad that it happened. I am a Dak guy. I know I've had some comments about Trey Lance, which, by the way, you know, we can get into that a little bit later. But I know how much you love, you know, you guys always roll your eyes at me with Trey Lance. But I do love Dak. We'll see what happens with him. But, yeah, it's one of those things where I come up with hot takes. If I hit on them, great. If I don't, cool. You know, that's part of this business, baby. Like, if we're not here making hot takes, what are we doing? Like, we got to give the people what they want, even if they totally disagree with us or whatnot. I'm going to speak how I feel. And the way I approach things might be a little bit differently than you and Chris. Like I approach things like we're at a local establishment watching the game and just talking ball and having these ridiculous takes, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, you're going off the vibes, which I love. And maybe Dak would have hit the 5,000-yard mark if he had a more dominant and a more consistent wide receiver three, which you already kind of teased a little bit, a certain wide receiver that Chris loves to talk about. We're for the people that aren't on the watching on YouTube, we're now showing a tweet last week from Bobby Belt, who is a fan favorite in Cowboys Nation. A few notes that he had from a mini camp practice, one of which was that Jalen Brooks had some nice catches once again today. Bobby Belt says, "I think I like him more than Jalen Tolbert as receiver number three right now," which I believe that's like really the first thing that we've seen as far as like traction gaining for Jalen Brooks potentially being that wide receiver three going forward. Pretty much everybody kind of just assumes Jalen Tolbert will be the guy, which I think is fair to say, just given the natural progression of things, given how things have gone. Odds are that it's probably going to be a Jalen, right? Jalen Tolbert, Jalen Brooks, even Jalen Moreno Cropper, like statistically speaking, the odds are in favor of somebody named Jalen being that wide receiver three. Brandon, I know you have already voiced your opinion and have feelings for a different young Cowboys receiver, but with what Bobby Belt said, and of course, Bobby is pretty well plugged in. He is a very seasoned observer of the Cowboys. How do you feel about like the idea of Jalen Brooks being that wide receiver three if he continues to build on this momentum?
I'm not opposed to it. Like I think Jalen, of the Jalens, and no offense to Cropper, to me, I do think Ryan Flournoy will take care of that part of it. I here's the thing. Cropper is one of those guys that I, when I wrote for the, for a former Great Place BTB, Moreno Cropper was one of the guys that I was high on, but things just kind of fell the way that they did last year. And I think it's getting too crowded. I do think if I had to pick between Jalen Tolbert and Jalen Brooks, I actually am leaning Brooks in that situation. I think, and Chris, he'll listen back to this and I'm sure I'll get a message from her or whatnot saying, "Hey, you're finally jumping on the train." I'm not jumping on the train because I'm still on the Flournoy train. But if I had to pick between the two, in limited duty with Brooks last year versus the multiple seasons of Tolbert, I haven't seen enough from Tolbert consistently. And he's been here long enough. He's been in the program long enough where I'm like, okay, when is he going to figure it out? I feel like he's the guy that he's going to be a surprise cut this year. That's just my bold prediction. Wow. I'm full of bold predictions. I wouldn't be shocked if Jalen Brooks and Ryan Flournoy battle for that spot. I know that's crazy because I know he was a recent day two draft pick just a few years ago, but sometimes you have to cut your losses and it wouldn't surprise me if he was like a surprise cut. And I'm going to preface it this way. That's if Jalen Brooks and Ryan Flournoy both ball out and Tolbert just lays a dud in preseason. If Tolbert can keep his head above water, so to speak, I think he has a good shot at making the roster. But if those two other guys that I mentioned ball out and Tolbert is kind of like just kind of floundering, then to me it would make more sense for the Cowboys to keep the two guys I just mentioned and get rid of Tolbert. I mean, we've seen teams do it. Look at Trey Lance. Trey Lance was a high level draft pick, and I won't go down that train too far. But Trey Lance was a high level draft pick, and after a couple years, he made his way to the Cowboys. So, I mean, I know that's comparing apples to oranges, but the point is, even if you draft a guy, in a higher, top three rounds, for example, it doesn't mean you're solidified for the future. I mean, look what the Niners did. I believe it was with Trey Sermon, Ohio State running back, a few years ago. Like, he was a high-level draft pick, and, like, he was, like, discarded for nothing. Like, it was, like I'm a fantasy football guy, and I was keeping my eye on him for dynasty purposes because we all know how the Niners are. Next thing you got Eli Mitchell, doing some things. Yeah. Like,
and Elijah Mitchell was in that same draft class as Trey Sermon. They took Sermon, I believe, in the fourth, Mitchell, like, late sixth.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
Mitchell was outgaining him. He was outproducing him. He was outplaying him. And then they traded for Christian McCaffrey, and neither of them play now.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey.
I think the moral of that story, though, both the Trey Lance and the Trey Sermon, is that the 49ers are bad at drafting.
I feel like they're bad at drafting Treys. I don't know what it is, But
they should avoid anybody named Trey. I also like the idea that in this scenario, Ryan Flournoy is the Cowboys' Brock Purdy, with that comparison to Trey Lance. And to your point, you mentioned Flournoy. It would not be a episode with Brandon Clements if Ryan Flournoy was not mentioned. You're very much a Flournoy boy, as we've coined the term. And speaking of Ryan Flournoy, for the YouTube audience, you're now seeing a tweet from Patrick No C Walker, another fan favorite here in Cowboys Nation. Always appreciate his insight. He's also very well plugged in with the team. He said, "I'm going to go ahead and say I believe Ryan Flournoy is going to turn heads in Oxnard. The plays he's making thus far largely hint at it. Today, a back pylon grab for a TD was at the height of his vertical. CB never stood a chance, being glued to him on the jump. Flournoy elevated, snatched it at the high point, crisp route, battled his own momentum by contorting on the way down, get both toes tapped inbounds. I expect him to make some waves." Which, that alone, without even considering who said it, would be, raise a few eyebrows. The fact that it's Patrick Walker, who one, knows ball, and two, knows the Cowboys inside and out. Like, this guy, you could probably go back and, really pull some receipts. He's got a pretty good track record with predicting this kind of stuff.
Yes, he does.
Ryan Flournoy is going to turn heads. And there's a few other people around the league that have started to say this as well. It's not like it's just him and Brandon. But even if it was just him and Brandon, those are, two pretty smart guys. So we double dipped now. Chris got, even though Chris isn't here, he got, the Jalen Brooks shout out, the Jalen Brooks love. And I'm sure he's going to be kicking himself that he's not here, because we know he loves himself some Jalen Brooks. And you got your moment for Ryan Flournoy. I don't have a receiver getting any love right now. So I'm just going to go ahead and stick up for my guy, Jalen Tolbert, because we haven't seen enough from him to make a definitive decision. Like, we'd all have talked endlessly at this point about his rookie year. Like, the Cowboys, I still don't really understand what went wrong there, but he just wasn't ready. They threw too much on his plate. It was too much for him. And then he wasn't able to be good at any one thing. But then all last offseason, all we heard was, he's so much more confident. I had even written, when Mike McCarthy took over play calling, I wrote an article at that great website that Brandon mentioned, Blood and the Boys, an article saying basically, with the shift to more West Coast principles with Mike McCarthy and the way he has a more simplified route tree, Jalen Tolbert is going to be in line for more production. And he had more production. Granted, it took a little bit for him to start seeing snaps because they were still trying to get Michael Gallup, and they felt confident in Michael Gallup being another year removed from his injury. Obviously, that did not completely work out, and we got to a point where Tolbert was actually getting more snaps than Gallup. And when he was in, he played well. When they threw it in his way, he made plays. He had a few really great physical catches. He had some really great route running. He showed the talent that made him a second-round pick a couple of years ago. He showed the talent of why the Cowboys still believe in him and held on to him. So, I think if Flournoy and Brooks are going to have a really good Oxnard and they're going to start balling out, I don't think it's going to be result in Tolbert also getting cut. I think we're just going to have a heck of a battle for wide receiver three, because between those three guys, as well as Kevontae Turpin, which they're going to get more involved on offense, even more from year one to year two, now going to year two to year three, we're going to have a lot of guys not named CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Cooks that we're going to have opportunity to see. And really just I think we're going to get to the end of training camp and feel like we got a lot of dudes in receiver. I feel good about receiver. And that's before we even talk about Deuce Vaughn being in the slot, which as a Deuce Vaughn truther, I don't think is worth making a big hubbub about, because I feel like every single year around this time, we're talking about some running back. Oh, we're going to give him reps in the slot. And then you put him out there and you're like, well, why don't we just put CeeDee Lamb in the slot? Why would we take away reps from CeeDee Lamb? So that's all beside the point, but I think the Cowboys are in a good spot there. And Brandon, before I move on, I'll give you one last chance to really get on your, your soapbox for Ryan Flournoy because he is your boy.
Yeah, I mean, when NoC was describing it and just, you know, reading different different folks around the Cowboys, I kept hearing and kept seeing Dez Bryant type player. And so if we can get even a portion of what Dez Bryant was to the Cowboys, especially peak Dez Bryant, in a guy who was a sixth-round pick, yes, he's an older older prospect, later-round draft pick, played at a smaller school, you know, this, that, and the whole thing. If he can even show a portion of, like obviously what NoC said, that reminds me of Dez Bryant. Like, that, the way he went up and got that ball and just snatched it and got his 2 feet down and made, you know, and just made the hell of a play, that has Dez Bryant, like, written all over it. So, and let's be honest, like, Ryan Flournoy is one of the most athletic people in that came out of this draft class. Like, you look at all the different athletic scores and all that stuff, he is up there. Like, he is a high-level athlete that has really good hands. He's a very – the thing that he still has to work on is, obviously, we got to see him do it against some really good cornerbacks, which, let's be honest, the Cowboys have a few of those, so I'm waiting to see how he does in training camp, but I'm also waiting to see how he does in preseason. Because I think the translate, you know, he'll translate well from SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, and I think he will do well in the NFL. I think, to me, if he balls out, like, I think, like, I feel like he can, and he's flashed it already in the preseason, I think he's going to be the receiver three. I still like, NoC doesn't lie, man. Like, when NoC sees it, like, he's there, man. Like, NoC is plugged in as you know, he's one of the more plugged in, and he knows ball. He's a great foul. He's a great, you know, any content he puts out, I'm always reading anyways, because I trust the science, you know, like that. He's just good. So, like, when I saw NoC, you know, throwing some love to Flournoy's way, it solidified, like, how I felt about Ryan Flournoy. It was good to see somebody that, you know, is as, you know, as big as NoC is to put some love out there for Ryan Flournoy. And again, I'm not saying Jalen Tolbert is going to get caught, but it wouldn't surprise me.
You did say that, though. You said it, and then you're like, "There's my bold take."
Here's the thing. But I had to kind of revise it just a touch, because, you know, I can't go too
backpedaling a little bit.
Yeah, I had to come back just a little, come back there a little bit. Here's the thing, and again, if Jalen Brooks and Ryan Flournoy just put on a show, and they're gonna have to, like, if it comes down to like I think Turpin's gonna be on the team, but, like, say it came down to Turpin or Tolbert, Turpin's making the team, kind of a thing. Like, Turpin, I don't even look at as 1 through 5 kind of a receiver. Like, I just look at him as a weapon. Like, that's just what I look at him as. Like, he can do gadget plays. He can do it all. So, like, for me, if Jalen Brooks and Ryan Flournoy just ball out, then it wouldn't surprise me if Jalen Tolbert's the odd man out. The likeliness of that happening, who knows? We're going to have to wait to see in 6 weeks when the real show starts with camp and everything. But again, I wouldn't be surprised. I know people are going to be on Twitter and, if, you know, say that were to happen, they're like, "Oh my God, I never saw this coming." Well, you heard it from here first, if that's the case. And again, I don't dislike Jalen Tolbert. Please, I just, you know, I have a lot of respect for him. Like, I think he's shown some flashes, but to me, he hasn't shown enough to be solidified as a roster spot, in my opinion. That's, you know, that's just my opinion on the whole thing. Jalen Brooks, I feel like he's shown enough flashes where he's going to get a shot. And I just think Ryan Flournoy, like, he's already a seasoned guy. Ryan Flournoy needs to hit right away, being at 25 years old in October, or his career could go down the track. So there's pressure on Ryan Flournoy to hit hard right away, because a lot of guys are coming in the league at 22. So they're in the league for a couple years before 25. He's going to be turning 25 in October during the season. So he needs to hit the ground running. So Ryan Flournoy has that pressure. And if he can do it, which I think he can, then they got themselves a hell of a receiver three in Ryan Flournoy for a few years.
Well, I think you could make the same argument for Tolbert as far as pressure goes, because, I mean, he's going into year three. So if he is able to, you know, lock up that wide receiver three job, and then he goes and balls out, whatever the, you know, the wide receiver three equivalent of, obviously he's still going to be behind CeeDee Lamb, probably Jay Ferguson, probably Brandon Cooks on the pecking order. But if he's able to, like, prove he's a starter in this league, then he goes into the final year of his rookie contract. Then he goes into the window where, like, the Cowboys are able to start negotiating with him. And he's going to have, you know, some added leverage there. He's going to know, like, whether the Cowboys give it to me or I go to the free agent market, like, if I ball out this year, like, then I've guaranteed I get a second contract. So there's pressure for him too, you know, obviously for, you know, for both of them. But again, like that's why I think the Cowboys are in a great spot with their receiver room. Obviously, yeah. Anytime you have CeeDee Lamb, you're already in a good spot. Brandon Cooks, I think, is going to have a much better year now that he's already gotten a good relationship with Dak Prescott. I think that competition between Tolbert, Brooks, Flournoy, Turpin, I think it's going to be good. It's going to put the Cowboys in a good spot, offensively speaking, which serves as a nice segue into our topic for the show, for this episode, which is how the Cowboys stack up against the rest of these NFC East teams. So we're just going to start by kind of looking at the other three teams and breaking them down a little bit. Obviously, you know, we like to focus on the Cowboys, America's team. Who wouldn't? They're the best team in football.
Yeah.
It's the reason that the old Texas Stadium had the hole in the ceiling so God could watch his favorite team. So,
hey, you know, that's what
you want. But having said that, sometimes we focus a little bit too much, not too much, but we focus so much on the Cowboys that maybe we don't know all the goings on with the other three teams until we get to the week when we got to play those, you know, icky, gross teams that we all despise. So Brandon, give us a breakdown of the New York Football Giants and what we can expect from the Giants this year, what you think we can expect from the Giants, and I'll see if I agree with you.
Not a whole lot. No. And in all seriousness, I know they're, you know, the Giants, that, you know, they're kind of stuck with Daniel Jones as their quarterback. And let's be honest, I think we all can agree. You know, I think that Daniel Jones is not the future quarterback for the New York Football Giants. I just don't see that happening. I feel like if things would have fell a certain way in the draft this past year, they were taking a quarterback, but the right quarterback didn't fall to them. And they couldn't get up any higher, you know, to get one of those quarterbacks that they coveted. And I will give them credit, and I can't believe I'm saying this because it's sick to my stomach, but they didn't just sit there and take the next guy available, which the value wouldn't have been there. Because let's be honest, I believe they were at 6 when they took Daniel Jones, and a lot of people think they reached on him. I don't think they wanted to taste that same medicine again by maybe going with a J.J. McCarthy, for example, you know, or one of the other quarterbacks like a Bo Nix, for example. So they stuck with Malik Nabers, who I think he's a future star. But the problem with Malik Nabers is the guy throwing passes to him. So I feel like Malik Nabers is going to be in a lot of trouble his, you know, first year or two, depending on how the whole Daniel Jones saga, you know, unfolds. Obviously, as we all saw in the last few days, they're really good, talented, but, you know, aging tight end Darren Waller just he hung up his boots. A lot of things going on outside of his life, outside of the football field, that's been very noted in the media. I won't go into that too much, but obviously, injuries and whatnot have, derailed what was a really good career. He was, when he was with the Raiders, he was one of the premier tight ends in the league. I don't think he ever came close to what the Giants hoped he would. I think he's what, 32? I think he is. He's 31, 32 years old. So he's in his early 30s. And obviously, he felt like it was time to retire. And I'm looking here at the roster, and I'm looking at the tight end position. It's kind of gross for the New York Giants. Daniel Bellinger and Theo Johnson. Those names don't scare anybody. I don't think they scare the Cowboys defense by any means, or any defense. But I will say, though, as somebody who follows a lot of Penn State football, because my wife is a diehard Nittany Lion fan, Theo Johnson is a really good and really talented player that I feel like he's going to translate well in the pros. So if I had to bet on who's going to be the starting tight end this year, I think Theo Johnson's going to jump over Daniel Bellinger. I think Bellinger's more of a tight end too for me anyways. So it kind of reminds me of when Jason Witten was gone and like, who's next? Who's going to be in the tight end room? The Giants might actually have, they have a similar situation where they had a really good tight end, a really productive, well, I don't want to say productive, but he was at one point, he was a really productive player, but a guy that they were sort of counting on to come back and be a quality player for this team. And now they have Bellinger, Jones, Stoll, Manhurts. Like it's not looking pretty, but last time I checked, the Cowboys have done fairly well on those fourth round tight ends. So You know, with Jake Ferguson and not so distant drafts ago. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to see the Giants do well anyways, obviously, but I don't want to totally, you know, just kind of crap on the parade there. Cause I think they all know, I think Giants fans all know that their team sucks, but I'm just saying it like it is because I have friends that are Giants fans and they say it. But yeah, Theo Johnson, I think he's going to be the tight end one this year. Daniel Jones is just not that good. I think we all know that. And then you replace, and here's the thing that ticks me off. You let Saquon Barkley go to a team that we're going to talk about later, the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, what are y'all doing? Like, you couldn't pay this man as much as you wanted and, like, couldn't keep him in town. Like, I get that he's been injured, but it's still Saquon freaking Barkley, like, another Penn State guy that I followed a lot, before coming to the NFL. I think he's going to be, you know, we'll talk about that with the Eagles, but I think the Giants are going to be very disappointed when Barkley has some big games against them this coming year. And then, you know, on the defensive side, I mean, they got some guns. Like, you know, Thibodeau, I think, is a really good player. Brian Burns, like, that was a heck of a trade. You know, they made a great trade for him. So, like, I think the edge rushing department, I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I'm looking at these DBs. The only DB that really makes me like, okay, they got a guy is Deontay Banks, who in 2023, so last, you know, not this past year's draft, but the year before, Deontay Banks was actually being mocked to the Cowboys, and I mocked him to the Cowboys. I liked him. I think he's going to be a really good pro. I think he had his ups and downs as a rookie, but I think their defense is going to be pretty, I'd say they're going to be a slightly above average defense. They're probably going to win more games than they should because their defense is pretty decent, but they're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to do what they did this past year, and they're going to fall to the back end of the top 10, which sucks for them because they're going to have to try to trade up for a quarterback. I got to give a huge shout out to Tommy Cutlets, Tommy DeVito, Syracuse football legend. And also, the Cutlets, but Tommy,
because for those not watching on YouTube, I was doing the hand gesture, the Italian hand gesture that Tommy DeVito made his thing.
Here's the thing, though, with Tommy, too. Like, I appreciate what Tommy did because of him playing so well for that short burst. They won games they shouldn't have won, which made them fall back in the draft and not get a quarterback. So thank you to Tommy Cutlets, Syracuse legend, for doing his service for the Cowboys Nation.
But Syracuse legend who, for the record, did not actually graduate from Syracuse, didn't finish his career at Syracuse.
Yeah, no, he went to
on to bigger and better things for the Fighting Illini.
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, real quick on that, you know, he had some better receivers with the Illini. I mean, he probably wishes he could play for Fran Brown because there's going to be some great receivers there. So yeah, Tommy DeVito was
like, "Who doesn't want to play for Fran Brown, right?"
What's that?
Who doesn't want to play for Fran Brown?
You aren't kidding. I mean,
aside from all the 5-star, 4-star guys that are going elsewhere, but
oh, easy now, we're getting some players.
Whoa.
We'll get to that's a topic for another day. But with the Giants circling back there, I think they're going to be in, and I won't rank them yet because I think we'll do that at the end. But I don't think they're going to have a great season, but they're going to flash some young talented players. And I think for them, like I was another guy, Aziz Ojulari is another talented player that I think I think he's another guy on their defense is good. I mean, I like their linebacker room really doesn't make me nervous in any way, shape, or form. So, but overall, the Giants are not going to be that great. They're going to be a dumpster fire, I think, this year. But I think they're going to develop some young talent. And if they can hit on the quarterback position in the next year or two, and if they keep some of those defensive players, I think they might be good in the next couple of years. But they're not going to be good next year.
Yeah. So here's my thing with the New York Giants. 3 years ago, they brought in this new regime. Joe Shane as the GM, Brian Daboll as the head coach. Joe Shane was the assistant GM for the Bills. Daboll was the offensive coordinator for the Bills. Both of them were, essentially the right-hand man in reviving one of the most beleaguered franchises in football at the time. Breaking out the big words, beleaguered, to just underscore just how bad the Bills had been for so long. And so, like, when the Giants made that move and they brought those guys in, aside from all the all the controversy around Dable's hiring and things that happen and all of that, I thought it was a good move. I thought, you know, these guys have seen a successful rebuild. They've seen it in the same area. So, like, I mean, Buffalo to, you know, New Jersey, because they don't actually play in New York, even though they're the New York Giants.
That's a fact.
But, I mean, from a weather perspective, like what it takes to win in December in this area, I thought it made a lot of sense. Since then, having seen the way that Brian Daboll has handled his players and his staff and the way that Joe Shane has handled his drafts, I could not be further out of this current Giants regime. Like zero concern about this current iteration of the team, especially after the way that this draft unfolded. And that really trickles down into agreeing with you, Brandon. I don't think they're going to be that good this year. They might be a little feisty just because, I mean, Brian Daboll at his core is a good coach. They're going to be able to kind of, you know, out-scheme a few underhand or undermanned teams this year, get a couple of wins here and there. But, like, just, like, looking back to the draft, like, you know, their first draft when they took Kayvon Thibodeau, I know you just talked about it. I mean, he's had a decent start to his career. He hasn't been, you know, a sensation, but he's been solid. And then, of course, they took Evan Neal, and Evan Neal's been okay as well. But, like, you know, they're still looking for tackle help. I mean, they went out and signed Jermaine Illuminor this year in free agency. They're still looking for tackle options. They're not like – Evan Neal wasn't so good that they're like, he's definitely our guy. Like, he's the cornerstone, right? Some of the guys that they could have had in that draft that they didn't take were like Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Kyle Hamilton, who fell, and he's been phenomenal with the Ravens. Like,
typical Ravens pick, by the way.
Huh?
Typical Ravens pick, by the way. Like, the Ravens always crush the draft.
No, it made absolute sense when they took him.
Yeah.
And even the next year, like, you were just talking about Deontay Banks. You like him. Like, nothing against Deontay Banks, but looking at that draft again, the very next pick was Dalton Kincaid, who, you know.
We know.
As we know, he was really good. Of course, Sam Laporta picked 34. But, like, this was the same offseason where the Giants traded for Darren Waller because they wanted to upgrade that tight end position. 2 years later, Darren Waller retiring. And now we're talking about Kincaid, we're talking about Laporta. And these are, like, I mean, Laporta's going to be a top five tight end this year. He was last year. Yes, Kincaid is not too far behind. And, I mean, obviously, you know, hindsight is to some degree 2020, but, like, you just look at some of those decisions and, I mean, we all kind of knew that these guys could be really productive players in a system like that. And, I mean, the comp, when I was talking about Dalton Kincaid back in that draft, I was saying, like, you basically just use him the way the Raiders use Darren Waller. So, like, they went out and traded for, you know, a 30-something-old tight end who had had some injury issues. And instead of using a pick on, you know, potentially the next Darren Waller. And then this year with the quarterback situation, like, maybe you don't believe in J.J. McCarthy, but at the same time, like, the fact that they did so much homework on the quarterbacks in this draft also tells you that they don't believe in Daniel Jones. 100%. And the way that they structured the Daniel Jones contract at the time was kind of beautiful because it gave them the opportunity to move on after this year. But the reason they gave him the extension in the first place is because if they had moved on after his rookie year, like, you're not going to get a good quarterback, like a starting quarterback in free agency. They didn't have a high enough draft pick at that point to draft a top quarterback. Like, they were going to be taking at least 1 year of just being terrible and essentially tanking for the top quarterback in that draft. And so they said, we'll extend him, but we'll give ourselves some flexibility so that if he's not good in that first year of the deal, we can get someone else. Well, he wasn't good that first year of the deal. And then going into a year where you're kind of in the same exact position of they need to have a guy on the team already to replace Daniel Jones, or you got to commit to the next 2 years of that contract, which is a lot more expensive. Yeah. And you had the opportunity to get J.J. McCarthy or even, you know, do what the Falcons did, take Michael Penix Jr., like, or Bo Nix. Like, maybe you believe in Bo Nix. You know, a lot of people think Sean Payton's a genius and he believes in Bo Nix. Like, that's three different guys that you did your homework on that you could have potentially had. And, you know, if it works out, like, awesome. Like, you've got your quarterback. If it doesn't work out, you're in the same exact spot you're going to be anyway. So I just, like, I just don't like the fact that they've taken so many, they've given themselves some potential outs and then taken those away almost immediately. And now they're in another situation where, like, they need Daniel Jones to be great this year. And as you were going through their tight ends, their running backs, their receivers outside of Malik Nabers, which also, like, Malik Nabers, great player, but putting, you know, pinning a lot of hopes on a rookie receiver to be great right out of the gate, not ideal. And then you go back to all the drama with the coaching staff last year. You know, Brian Daboll multiple times took play calling from Mike Kafka, their offensive coordinator. They had to promote him to assistant head coach this year to keep him, even though he interviewed for a couple other offensive coordinator jobs. Wink Martindale, their highly respected defensive coordinator, walked out because Daboll fired some of his assistant coaches without consulting him. There were, you know, reports of him, like, you know, just talking trash about Martindale on the coach's headset during games. And I look at all that and I'm like, you're not winning games. You're not bringing in talented players. You're not maximizing your value, whether it's how you use your draft picks, how you spend your money, and getting good players in and keeping them in the building. And your coach is, like, talking over people, trying to scheme on the sidelines to talk trash about his coworkers. I just don't think it's going to work out. I think they're in for another rebuild soon. And I mean, that makes me happy. So I'm in full agreement with you there, Brandon. I don't really expect a lot from the Giants this year. I don't expect a lot from them the next 5 years because of the way that they've kind of hindered their own potential rebuild effort through this regime. And, you know, having said that, now I'm sure they're about to, you know, go on a tear and Daniel Jones will look like the 22 version of himself and make us both look like fools. But while we're at it, let's go ahead and talk about the other NFC East team that surely there's going to be some hot takes about this one just because of the connections, and that's the Washington Commanders. New head coach, Dan Quinn. New GM, Adam Peters, who comes from the 49ers, also a big, big problem for the Cowboys, and a new owner, Josh Harris, who bought the team a year ago, took over for the truly awful Dan Snyder. And Josh Harris, if I'm not mistaken, is also the owner of the 76ers. Is that right? Did I just put my foot in my mouth?
That's a good question. I am not 100% on that. I'll be honest with you. Like, I know, like, obviously, I know the Dan Quinn portion, Cliff Kingsbury, you know, Joe Witt, you know, obviously.
I'm looking this up because I feel like, yeah, he's the part owner of the Philadelphia 76ers, the New Jersey Devils, and the Washington Commanders. So he's got, like, a trifecta of areas that, like, hate the Cowboys. So, like, between all that, you've got plenty of ammo here for the Washington Commanders to just really renew that rivalry because it hasn't been much of a rivalry with how bad this franchise has been. But Brandon, tell us about the Commanders, what we can expect from them in year one.
I think you're going to see more out of the Commanders than you will see out of the New York Giants. I do think they have better pieces in place. I feel like, you know, well, I mean, Dan Quinn, you know, was a quality defensive, he's a great defensive mind, and he was a good defensive coordinator with the Cowboys and in other places. He was also, at points, you know, he was in the Super Bowl 28-3, against Tom Brady, but he did make it to the Super Bowl. So, like, to be honest, like, Dan Quinn, I think he's a quality coach. And, you know, the Commanders, obviously, you know, they believe in him. I also, you know, my sneaking suspicion, I don't know if it's true or not, but my sneaking suspicion is, you know, Belichick didn't want it, so Dan Quinn was their next choice because I think everybody wanted Belichick, and Belichick was probably taking the year off. But Dan Quinn's a good choice. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be an interesting setup as offensive coordinator. Obviously, we know his ties in college and in NFL. Like, he's a very unique kind of a coach for offensive purposes. He's going to throw some things at you that most coaches just don't throw at you. You're going to see. I think you're going to see a lot of great things, you know, to look forward to in the future with Jaden Daniels. I already said this before on our podcast. Like, he was my number one quarterback this past year in this class. Like, I'm very high on him. I know you're a fan of his as well from his days at that school in Arizona. Yep. So
Harvard of the West, as they call it.
Yeah, Arizona State, the Sun Devils. But I mean, here's the thing. Like, and this is where I get, like, you know, I kind of laugh a little bit because it's like, Dan Quinn, like, has to, like, bring all these Cowboys guys in. Like, he, you know, Cowboys coach, like, Joe Witt, Let's see here. Let's see. He brings in Tyler Biadasz to be his center. He brings in Dorrance Armstrong to be his one of his edge rushers. By the way, that defensive line actually does look pretty good. I'm not going to lie to you. Where, you know, they drafted Johnny Newton in the second round, where a lot of people thought he'd be a first round pick. I think Johnny Newton, like, he's in a great position because you're playing behind Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen, who are two of the best interior defensive linemen in the game. So, like, a lot of people are, like, already talking, like, oh, Johnny's hurt again. Johnny's still got injury problems. Here's the thing. When Johnny's ready to play, they can take their time bringing Johnny in and bringing him up to speed, you know, to be a really force on the defensive line, like we all know he can be and what he did at the University of Illinois. But because they have the luxury of having two great studs, Payne and Allen, I think for him it's going to be good growth, and I think it's going to be good value. And they also have Fedarian Mathis as well. So they got, like, this pipeline of Alabama players, which you really can't go wrong with Bama players because, you know, obviously under the Nick Saban tree, you can get some really good players. You know, and then, you know, Cleon Ferrell, like, you know, I know that's Chris's guy. He was a Clemson guy originally. So too bad Chris isn't here to talk about his Clemson guy. But Ferrell was a high-level draft pick of the Raiders, just a handful of years ago. So, like, and then Frankie Louvu, I know that was somebody I know you liked because I know we've talked in the offseason. So, that's a good quality linebacker. Obviously, Bobby Wagner. Jeremy Chin, I'm looking at this list. I mean, the defense looks really good. Like, I think, and they even, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think they got Noah Igbagani. I think he's there as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I was waiting to pounce on that one because he's the other Cowboy that they got, but
I forgot about. Yeah. I honestly forgot about that. I mean, Noah, the first touchdown of the year and all that last year.
I remember because we did an episode where, I think this was before the draft. So I think I'm pretty sure it was back when we were still the show was actually with SB Nation and Blogging the Boys.
Yeah.
But we did an episode where we were talking about like which Cowboys free agent we want to retain the most that's like at this point left. This was like right after Tyron Smith had left. And it was like, okay, like who else are they going to re-sign? I think they had like just re-signed the long snapper whose name is, God, it's blanking out of my memory.
Oh, what's his name? McQuaid?
No.
McQuaid. Oh my God. He's your doppelganger. Oh my God.
What is his name?
Oh my gosh. You're killing me, Smalls. Oh my God. And I'm upset with myself because I am having withdrawals right now. I'm drawing such a blank right now.
Oh, Trent Sieg.
Trent Sieg.
Yeah.
Sorry, Trent.
Trent, if you're listening.
We love you, Trent. Sorry, man.
I'm so sorry. This is the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Your doppelganger.
Yeah. No, it's – but anyway, I think they had just re-signed him. And so we were like, who else are they going to re-sign of their pending free agents? And you guys were talking about I forget who all you were saying, but like a couple of receivers guys that like play, or like Stephon Gilmore was a popular one.
Yeah.
And I said I want Noah Igbinoghene, and my reasoning being like, you know, he was a first round pick. He's great at press man coverage. Like, he's a young, moldable guy. Mike Zimmer liked him in that draft, and he was drafted like two picks before the Vikings drafted. And so I was like, I think, you know, he's young, he's moldable. I think he could be a good fit for Mike Zimmer.
Yeah.
Literally, like 2 days after that episode dropped, the Commanders went and signed Igbinoghene, and like out of nowhere. And I was like, I joked. I was like, Dan Quinn must have been listening and heard that and was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to go ahead and just snatch him up.
I mean, here's the thing with Quinn too. Like, they're assembling some really good players. Like, and I mentioned all those defensive players, but they brought in Austin Eckler for a running back. Like I know like he's been banged up, but like Jaden Daniels is a very mobile quarterback. Like, he's a very neat, like the dude can do so many things, which is why, like, for me, he was my number one quarterback. I mean, look what he did. Let's see, Mr. Heisman. I mean, like, it's like he was so good. Like, his, I believe he was passing like what, over 70% of his completion percentage. Like it was insane, like what he was doing. And you know, you obviously you bring in, I believe Zach Ertz is on the team too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Like you forget because they actually made a lot of moves in the offseason that the Cowboys obviously did not. But yeah, I mean, their offensive line is interesting because I think that's their weak point. Cornelius Lucas is going to be an elite left tackle. Sam Cosmi, he played at Texas a few years ago. Like, you know, he's bouncing around just a little bit. Like, I don't see him, you know, being much of a star. I think honestly, Tyler Biadasz might be their best player on their offensive line. Like, to me, that's their weak spot. And I think, you know, if you're not good in that area, it doesn't matter how good your Austin Ecklers are, your Jaden Daniels are. Obviously, they have the McCaffrey pipeline, so Luke McCaffrey's on the team. You got Jahan Dotson, another great Penn State guy. I know I've mentioned that a few times, but they know how to bring players in. The Ohio State's scary Terry McLaurin. I've been a fan of Diami Brown from North Carolina. Like, he's a guy that he's a quality fourth receiver, I think. Like, I thought like he would be a little bit higher because he was a third round pick just a few years ago. And I remember watching him in the ACC under Mac Brown. I thought he'd be a bigger name. But yeah, I think the Commanders are one of those teams where they're going to be a notch above the Giants. But I think they're one of those teams where, you know, you got 17 games in a season, regular season. They're probably going to be in that range of, like, they're going to win about 6 or 7 games, maybe 8 if they get lucky in a game or two. But they're going to be a below 500 team this year. I do think they're better than the New York Giants. But I think the Commanders, if they can get a better – if that offensive line can figure it out, they could be good in the next year or two.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if these Commanders are – wrapping up the season like right around 500, like showing like, hey, we got some talent, we got some pieces for the future. We're not quite ready to like compete for a playoff spot. Although that being said, you know, all it takes is a few other NFC teams to just really be terrible and you can kind of waltz your way into a 7 seed these days. I think the Commanders have done a really good job. And I think it comes down to where I just like talked a whole bunch of smack about the GM and head coach in New York or New Jersey. I think the duo that just came in to Washington, I'm impressed. Like, and Dan Quinn, I will say, because I've talked a lot of smack about Dan Quinn on this show as well. I do have a high opinion of Dan Quinn. He was a much better head coach than people remember in Atlanta. I mean, very first year, I think they were 8-8. The next year, they were in the Super Bowl. And people say, oh, well, you know, Kyle Shanahan, like, yes, he had a phenomenal offense that year. The next year, like the next few years, they stayed productive on offense. They weren't as great as that one year because they were one in every single category. Like, you can't get better than that. But, like, he's shown an ability to hire good offensive coordinators. I mean, the guy that he replaced Kyle Shanahan with was Steve Sarkisian. He's now leading Texas, who almost made it to the college football playoff last year. They were pretty darn good. Were they in the playoff? I'm forgetting now. That feels like ages ago.
Yeah, Texas was in the playoff, much to the chagrin of some people out there. But
so they didn't make the college football playoff. Even better in Dan Quinn's case.
But Sarkisian, though, Sark was also not only a Texas guy, but obviously Nick Saban thought highly of him to bring him into his staff a few years back, right, too. So yeah.
And to your point about all the Alabama players, Dan Quinn, he's had a really good relationship with Nick Saban for a while. He actually coached on Saban's Miami Dolphins team way back in the day. So they've been tight for a while. But the thing that was Dan Quinn's undoing in Atlanta was that, one, he was the guy that ultimately at the end of the day had a final say on the roster. That was a part when he got hired. He was the guy making the calls on draft night. Thomas Dimitroff, his GM, was a big part of that, but Dan Quinn had final say on the roster. And at a certain point, he was handling all the roster decisions. He was doing the head coach duties, and he ended up taking over defensive play calling because there were some issues with the defensive staff. And he was just doing too much. And the roster got older. He wasn't able to spend the time he needed to supplement all the people that were aging out of the system. and you just end up with a team that isn't as good. And Dan Quinn even said that when he got to Dallas, and people were asking, like, what have you learned from your time with the Falcons? And he said some of the effect of, like, don't bite off more than you can chew. So he gets this head coaching job, and it's pairing him with Adam Peters, who was many have said was, like, the actual guy behind the 49ers resurgence in that front office. And, you know, he had a lot of experience in front offices. John Lynch, the GM, had no experience in front offices. So it's not hard to connect dots and say that Adam Peters was, like, the shadow GM. So he's highly respected among talent evaluators. And looking at this first draft class, it's hard to disagree. I think between those two guys and having Josh Harris, who by all accounts is an owner with lots and lots of money, who hires people that are good at their job and lets them do their thing, I think the Commanders have a lot of reason to be excited about the future. I look at this roster, and to your point, like, Austin Eckler's he's a really great pass catching running back. They also have Brian Robinson and Chris Rodriguez, two different running backs that are, you know, 225 plus pounds. Those are going to be your between the tackles power running guys, and then they're just going to let Austin Eckler do what he does best, which is get into the open field and make guys miss. The offensive line is a question, but again, with Jaden Daniels and the mobility he has, you can work around that a little bit. Cliff Kingsbury, I think, is a good scheme fit for Jaden Daniels. Don't know if obviously he's not coaching the Cardinals anymore for a reason, but he's had some time off to kind of learn from his mistakes. He worked with Caleb Williams, who was the only player drafted higher than Jaden Daniels. And I think, yeah, like you said, they're not ready to compete right now, but I think they have a bright future. It kind of scares me. And in the interest of making Chris heard, because I know he said this last week to me, and he said it before on this show, I think, as well, but he thinks not only are the Commanders going to be good, but they're going to be so good that he thinks the Cowboys are going to be so bad that the Cowboys would be competing with the Commanders for second place instead of the Cowboys competing with the Eagles for first place. So that kind of gives you an idea, an inside look at where Chris has his ranking of players. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But first, we're going to fight our gag reflex and talk about the Eagles. Brandon, you go first, because I don't want to say a single good thing about this Philadelphia Eagles franchise. But, I mean, they have been – rumor has that they've been winning some games, so they must be doing something right.
Well, I mean, Howie Roseman's one of the best GMs in the league, if not the best GM in the league right now. That makes me sick just saying that, but facts are facts. You know, I'm a football guy, and I'm not going to ignore greatness because, you know, he's wheeling and dealing, making great picks, trades, signing players. Like, he makes it work, and like he just finds talent and makes talent. And you know, I'm looking through the team and looking at the moves they've made. I mean, let's be honest. Let's start with the other Kelsey, you know, Jason Kelsey. I know everybody wants to talk about Travis and a particular, female he associates himself with. We'll leave that for another day, of course. But Jason Kelsey, who is now retired, enjoying the fruits of his labor. He was Hall of Fame center. He's going to be he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion. One of the greatest centers of all time. I think that whole, brotherly shove, you know, whatever, the tush push, that was him more than anything else, because he just did it better than anybody else. I think you're going to see a regression in that department as well, which I think was their bread and butter last year, where like they knew if it was fourth and one, they were going to get it. I don't think they're going to get it as successfully with Cam Jurgens as their center versus Jason Kelsey. So they're going to have to fill that void, because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Cam Jurgens is moving from guard to center, I believe is what my understanding is. And then right now, I think it's Tyler Steen and then Landon Dickerson's on the left side, on the left guard. I think the two best positions for them are the outside players. Jordan Mailata, one of the best tackles in the game. They found him out of nowhere. Like, he wasn't even a natural NFL type of player. Like, he was playing a different type of sport. In the land out under, you know, a handful of years ago. So, like, that was a huge find. Like, that was a guy they drafted in the seventh round back in 2018, and he's turned into a stud. Like, he's one of the best left tackles in the game. So, pat on the back for them. And then obviously Lane Johnson, when healthy, is probably, if not the best right tackle in the game. I mean, he's a very talented player, but he's had some availability issues. So I think the outside of that offensive line is pretty good. I am concerned with the center and the right guard. I just think that's going to be their weakness for the Eagles this year, which that's kind of, if that's the weakness and they use that brotherly shove, they're going to tip their hand and they're probably going to go to the left side because they're going to go behind Cam. They're going to go behind Landon Dickerson. I think that's where they're going to kind of move things, because I think the center and right guard position, I think they're lacking there. Now, obviously, Jalen Hurts, quality player, and I will say this, and I know a lot of Eagles fans will huff and puff about it, but to me, he's a glorified running back is how I look at him. Let's be honest, Dak Prescott's a better passer. I don't care what anybody says. Just look at the numbers. I mean, Jalen Hurts, he should put up decent numbers because he's got Devontae Smith. He's got A.J. Brown. He's got Dallas Goedert. You can throw the ball, even if it's not even a great pass. If it's in their vicinity, those guys are catching the ball. So I think he's been more – I think he's looked better because of the weapons around him. I think he's a heck of a runner. I think he's a good player. But I don't see him as an elite quarterback. I just don't. I think Dak Prescott's better than him. I think Dak does the things that Jalen wishes he can do. That's just my opinion. Does that mean Jalen Hurts is not a good player? No, he is a good player. No argument there. He's had a good career. Another Alabama guy.
I'm gonna cut that up and turn it into a little promo. You saying just Jalen Hurts is not a good player, and we're gonna blast that everywhere.
Oh God, I'm gonna get freaking blown up. That's fine. I'm good with that. As y'all know, you guys are on social media much more than I am. So I just I keep my notifications off. You know that dumpster fire with Philadelphia. They're gonna go nuts about it. That's fine. But no, I mean, here's the thing. They have Saquon Barkley too, by the way. That backfield's gonna be good. They got two really good running backs in the backfield, Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. So it's just the way that it is. I think Jalen Hurts is an adequate passer. I'm not saying he's an elite passer. I think he's an adequate passer. But let's be honest, if it wasn't for the weapons that he has, I don't think he puts up the quality numbers that he has put up in an Eagles uniform. Now, flipping it to the other side, looking at the defense, I mean, they're pretty stacked there. Jalen Carter's a beast. Jordan Davis is a beast. Milton Williams, another player that I liked coming out of college a couple years ago. And then you have Bryce Huff, who just I believe he was formerly of the New York Jets, good player. Brandon Graham's still around. I know he's getting older, but he's still there. Devin White, Josh Sweat. I mean, I can name all these players. Big play Slay's there. Gardner Johnson's back. He was he took a 1-year sabbatical with the Lions, and came. He's back with the Eagles. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. And then their cornerback room is going to be interesting because they double dipped because they took in round one they took Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, and they took Cooper DeJean. Out of Iowa, who would have been if it wasn't for some injury issues coming into the combine in the spring, he probably would have been a first round pick, in my opinion. So they got two first round pick type players at that position. So as long as one of those hits, which honestly I think both of them are going to hit because they're both really talented players, I think you pair those two up with a big play Slay, they're going to be pretty solid at corner, which is going to make it even more difficult for the Cowboys to find that receiver three. Because let's be honest, I think Cooper DeJean is going to be a good slot corner. I think right out the gate, I think it's going to be Mitchell, and I think it's going to be Mitchell and Slayer going to be on the outside. So I think it's important that the Cowboys figure out, receivers 3, 4, and 5, because I think the Eagles are stacked. They're built to win. They also, in the special teams department, they have one of the best kickers in the league. In the elements, Jake Elliott. I mean, some of the kicks he's made is ridiculous. Here's the thing. I'll say this. I'm not the biggest Nick Sirianni guy, and it's not because of the Eagles thing. I think he's an overrated coach. I think even if a Mike Tomlin, for example, which I know he'll never leave Pittsburgh, he just signed that new contract extension. He's a Steeler as long as he wants to be a Steeler. That's just Mike Tomlin. It's a Steeler way. But if you put a Mike Tomlin, pair him up with a Howie Roseman and just let Howie do his thing and then let Mike Tomlin coach, they don't lose more than two games a year, every year. Like that's like Nick Sirianni to me is an average, he's an average head coach that was held up by guys like Jonathan Gannon, for example, great coordinators. And Shane Steichen, with the Colts, that's two guys that I think propped him up to be a better coach than I think he is. I think he's an average coach. They got Kellen Moore, which means, I know we're talking about that, right?
I don't mean to cut you off, but you're playing my music here with the Nick Sirianni hate.
Here's the thing, bro. Like, Sirianni is one of those guys for me personally where he has great personnel people and great personnel that make him look better than who he really is. Like, here's the thing, you put him on a lesser organization that doesn't have a Howie Roseman running things and having the great personnel that they have. Because let's be honest, the Philadelphia Eagles from top to bottom are a pretty damn good football team. I think we can agree with that. As much as we don't like them as Cowboys fans, I have to tip my cap to Howie Roseman and how he's built that team, because that team is good. Every time the Cowboys and Eagles play, especially with Howie Roseman, the way he builds things, it's tough. But we have a good shot because Nick Sirianni is not as good of a coach as I think he thinks he is. And then Kellen Moore, to me, I think, and you might disagree with me on this, but my thoughts on Kellen Moore, and I loved Kellen Moore when he was at Boise State, loved the lefty quarterback, one of the best college quarterbacks. He was one of the great college quarterbacks of his era, like with Boise State, like they were in the major bowl games. Like he was a good player, but he was more of a smart guy. I don't think he had all the athletic ability to be an NFL starter, but he had it here, like not too many people. But Kellen Moore, I think he's more worried about putting points on the board than running, being smart about, game management. Like that was my biggest issue with Kellen Moore. Like he's such a smart guy. Like he really is. Like he's a brilliant mind, but I felt like he was more about running the score up than being more of a game manager. That's just my take on him as a coordinator with the Cowboys, over the last handful of years. And then obviously, he wasn't with us last year because of the Chargers and everything. So I'm curious to see this Kellen Moore, Jalen Hurts mix. I don't know if it's going to work, but I will say what's going to work for them is Vic Fangio is one of the best defensive minds in football. So I think the Eagles defense is going to be pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head with the roster evaluation. Although I will say you left out the low hanging fruit of the true number one quarterback on this roster, which is Kenny Pickett.
Forgot about Kenny Pickett.
Moving across the state from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. Total downgrade, in my opinion. But from a coaching standpoint, because I think that's really where things will be determined with this team. Because nobody's going to deny the roster's talented. Howie Roseman is the best GM in the NFL. I don't know what kind of deal he made with the devil when he got his job back from Chip Kelly, but he has just been different ever since then. And I really want to know the details of that deal because it doesn't look like he gave up a single thing. Like he has gotten everything he's wanted. He got a Super Bowl out of it. And then a couple of years later, he fired the coach and still got back to the Super Bowl. Didn't win it, but I just don't get it. But yeah, the coaching staff, like you said it to a T, Nick Sirianni was held up by Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. Of course, Gannon is now the head coach of the Cardinals. They don't really have a whole lot in the talent department, but they were able to upset the Cowboys. They were able to upset a couple of other teams last year. I think they beat the Eagles later in the year too, granted once they had Kyler Murray back. But he's kind of shown an ability to coach a really tough team that fights hard even though they have a clear talent disadvantage. And Shane Steichen was phenomenal in his first year with the Colts. Navigated the quarterback situation, Anthony Richardson getting hurt early on, Gardner Minshew almost made the playoffs when Gardner Minshew was the quarterback.
Gardner Minshew, very, very underrated player. I think he's one of the best backups in the league. I'm just putting it out.
I would agree with that. But even still, having him as your starter for 10-plus games and almost making the playoffs as a rookie head coach.
Pretty good.
Credit to Shane Steichen. People also forget that first year when Sirianni took over, he started the season as the offensive play caller. Eagles were not good. Jalen Hurts did not look good. Offense was a mess. Shane Steichen takes over, you know, six or seven games in. Suddenly the offense is good. Suddenly Jalen Hurts looks good. Suddenly they're talking about, yeah, we got our quarterback. Shane Steichen leaves, and this last year, and the offense, people are talking every game. Offense just doesn't look right. Jalen Hurts, there's something off. Is he injured? Like, he's got to be injured because he doesn't look right. And, I mean, it just, like, it's so, like, painfully obvious that it was Shane Steichen that was, like, doing, just like how people said, like, Frank Reich or John DeFilippo were the ones, you know, on the Doug Peterson Eagles. And now we're at a point where Kellen Moore has come in, and Kellen Moore's offense is, like, drastically different from Nick Sirianni's offense in every single way. So I'm really interested to see how much of this offense is Kellen Moore's offense, how much of it is Nick Sirianni's offense, and what that split actually ends up being as far as what it means for Jalen Hurts.
Well, here's the thing, too. Kellen Moore, like, I was reading different reports out of Philly. Like, the reports are that the offense is going to look 95% different from last year. So what does that tell you?
And that could be. But also at the same time, like, one thing that Kellen Moore loves is pre-snap motion. Nick Sirianni has been very outspoken against pre-snap motion.
Yeah.
Like, if Sirianni is saying, fundamentally, I don't do this, and Kellen Moore is saying, fundamentally, I do this, like, how long until we get a fight between them, the same way that Sirianni a year ago demoted Sean Desai, their defensive coordinator, in the middle of the year for Matt freaking Patricia, of all the coaches. The guy that Darius Slay on your team already hates with a passion, and you put him in charge. And I think similarly, like, Vic Fangio, you know, well-traveled coach, very, very highly regarded. Have you heard any of the Dolphins players talking this offseason about how they feel with their new defensive coordinator and the fact that he's not named Vic Fangio? Like, you're talking about another really caustic personality getting in that locker room. One of the most high-pressure locker rooms, one of the most acid-spewing fan bases. Like, they threw snowballs at Santa Claus.
Yes.
Like, and you put Vic Fangio's personality in that locker room in a high-visibility position with Nick Sirianni, with Kellen Moore, who are going to butt heads at some point, with Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, who've already been quarreling on the sidelines in the past. I just, like, it's like, it's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be a lot like last season. They're going to be good because they've got the talent. And when they can overwhelm opponents with their great offensive line, with their great defensive line, with their athleticism on the edges, they're going to be good. But the moment that adversity hits, they're going to crumble. And so ultimately it just comes down to how often is adversity going to hit for them. And last year we saw a lot of things went their way. Like, they just got lucky. And, you know, all these different games, you know, the Chiefs game where they beat the Chiefs and it was like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, like, drops the go-ahead touchdown, or, you know, all these different games where it was like, yeah, there's no way they should have won. Like, the first game against the Cowboys, and it was like they had three fumbles and they recovered all three of them. Luke Schoonmaker had that touchdown, you know, taken off the board because he missed the goal line by an inch. Are they going to run into some adversity and are not going to be able to handle it? Because that's just the mentality that they have. They have so many hotheads in that locker room. So, like, I could see it going either similar to last year, where they have a really good team and they're very good and they get to the playoffs and eventually can't get, you know, go forward anymore. Or I could see things just collapsing in on themselves and imploding and having a terrible year. I would not be surprised with either of those outcomes. I will say I am just absolutely counting down the days till we see Cowboys Eagles, because just from a storyline standpoint, Kellen Moore against his old team, Mike McCarthy kind of sort of fired him, and offense got better without him, and now he gets to go toe-to-toe with him for the second straight year. Like, we saw that last year with the Chargers, worked out for the Cowboys. We'll get to see it twice this year. And also Mike McCarthy versus Vic Fangio, which they've traded some words in the past. They got to face each other last year in Miami, went the Dolphins' way, and Mike's going to get a chance of some revenge there with already the rivalry of Cowboys-Eagles. So I'm very excited for that, just from a coaching standpoint. as well as, you know, trying to beat the Eagles, because as always, it's Dallas forever, Philly for never.
Facts.
But having given that sage advice, Brandon, I think we can probably guess at this point just from how we've talked about these teams, but rank the NFC East today. Who do you think is the best team top to bottom?
Well, I'll start from the bottom, you know, starting from the bottom. Now we hear, I think it's Drake, if I'm not mistaken. I think obviously I said dumpster fire and Giants. So I think the Giants are going to be finishing dead last. And I'll even give you a record for them this coming year. I think they're going to be like 5-12. I think that's where they're going to be. And they're going to win a couple games they probably shouldn't win, because, you know, that team's just going to give it away. So I think they're going to be 5-12. And then the Washington Commanders are going to be a leg up, they're going to be a peg up, but they're still going to be in third, in my opinion. I think they're, you know, and I was, you know, the more you talked about it too, you know, I was at first thinking maybe 6 or 7 wins, but I do think they're going to be closer to the 8-9 record, I think, this year. I think they're one of those teams where, like you had mentioned, I'll give you kudos to that, where they're going to be on the cusp of something really good. And I think they're going to be a team to watch out for in 2025. I think 2024 is going to be a good year for them, you know, for their future prospects. So I think 8-9 record, I think, for the Commanders. And then this is where I go different. I know Chris would disagree with me on this one, but I think the Philadelphia Eagles are number two. I think they're a peg down below the Dallas Cowboys. And here's why. You just mentioned it. The possible toxicity between the coaches, you know, there might be some issues there. How is Jalen Hurts going to figure out the Kellen Moore offense? How is that Kellen Moore offense going to mesh with the players that they have? And you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, I think Vic Fangio is going to do a good job with the defense. I do think that defense will be stout, but I'm wondering what's going to happen on the offensive side. I feel like there's going to be some Moore and Sirianni conversations that are going to get a little hot and heavy this year. Just a prediction of mine. So I still think they're really good, but I do think they're just a peg behind the Cowboys. And I do think, for me, I think they're a 11-6 team this coming year. I do think they're going to be just a game, just a game back of what I think is a 12-5 Dallas Cowboys season. I think the lack of moves from the Dallas Cowboys signals to me that they know what they have and they trust what they have already. And they also want to re-sign the guys that they have long-term. So I feel like a combination of those things with hitting on a couple of these draft picks. I'll say this, the last year's draft, you know, obviously it was what it was. Chris would, you know, go all day and say it was the worst draft in the history of the Cowboys, probably. I know he's not here to defend himself, but, you know, that's kind of, you know, he loves the universe. You know, I know he loves Michigan, you know, for all the great, you know, Schoonmaker and Mozzie and all that. But
your Hall of Famers.
Hey, you never know. You know what? It's year two. Sophomore slumps. Maybe it's a sophomore, just kind of a surgeon, so to speak.
Sophomore pump.
Yeah. And here's the thing. With Scooney, if Scooney can show any flashes, I mean, you know, he's flashed a little bit, but I feel like if he can get healthy and stay healthy, he's got a shot to be really good. Mozzie, I think, you know, if he, you know, puts on that weight and gets to back to more of what he was in Michigan, I think he will be more traditionally what he was in Michigan under Mike Zimmer. I think Mike Zimmer just knows how to use him the right way. And I think Mozzie Smith and Dan Quinn, I think their styles didn't really mesh, I don't think. So I'm really banking on Mozzie to be really good for the boys this coming year. And then obviously we have CeeDee Lamb. I think he's going to be a beast. Dak Prescott's in a contract year at this stage. You know, we'll wait and see if he gets a new deal done. You know, it seems like it might be going that way. You know, the running back room is by committee, but I think that's not a bad thing. You know, everybody's talking like, oh, we don't have a true number one back. That's fine, because if you got three backs that are quality, like, you know, a Zeke and a Rico, and just kind of, you know, work it, you know, work the 20s with Rico and then work the inside of the, you know, the red zone with Zeke, and then sprinkle in Deuce Vaughn or, you know, whoever else is going to be part of the roster. It's going to keep those guys fresh for the late season, where they're going to potentially play in some bad weather and they're going to need to lean on that running game. And those guys they'll have less wear and tear throughout that season of 2024 coming up. So I think that could give them a little boost in the running game. And then, you know, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, I think that duo, I think you are right about Brandon Cooks. I think he gets back on track. I think he's going to break 1,000 yards this year. I just have a good feeling about that. As long as he can stay healthy, I think he's got a shot to be. I don't think he's a 1,500 yard receiver, but I think he could be like 1,000, maybe 1,100 yard receiver this year, which is definitely a great thing. And then you'll have, you know, obviously on the other side, CeeDee Lamb, probably close to 1,400-1,500 yards this year. I just think that's just going to be a monster season. Jake Ferguson's going to take another step forward. To me, you were talking about Sam Laporta and Dalton Kincaid. Don't forget about our boy Fergie. I think Fergie's going to be a – I think people are going to be really – they're going to be singing his praises by the end of 2024 as one of the best tight ends in the league. And then on the, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, still got Micah, still got Tank Lawrence. The linebacker room is being redone. You know, Kendrick is here. You know, Kendrick's a very talented player. I think you got Damone Clark. You know, he's going to be coming back another year here. Maris Diafoe, a really high draft pick this past year. You know, there's already great reports come out of camp about what he looks like as a player. I'm excited to see what he can bring to the Cowboys. And then DeMarvin Overshown, who I know we liked a lot last year until he got hurt. So, you know, we'll see how he does. But and here's the thing. To me, people were talking about how weak the linebacker room was last year. We're going to be very strong this year. And, looking at this roster, you know, I'm looking at the linebacker room right now. And, you know, you got Clarks, you got Eric Kendricks. You have Leofau, you have Overshown. Shoot. You even got Damian Wilson, who's going to be one of those, fringe. I think he's got a shot to make the roster, but he's going to be more of a back end kind of, you know, give a guy a blow kind of, player. I think he's going to be a rotational player, but if he makes the team. And then Trayvon Diggs is back after injury. I think he's going to have a great year. Deron Bland's going to look great on the outside. You know, Jordan Lewis, I think, could also have a really good season. I think, and also the safety position's really deep this year. I it's going to be a toss-up. I think they keep four, and I think they keep Wilson, Hooker, Thomas, and Bell. I think those are the four that I would keep. I think Julius Wood is one of the guys I think you like. I think it's more of a position where we already got the players on the roster. Julius Wood might land somewhere else and get some run on special teams. And then, you know, I can't leave out, you know, Brandon Aubrey. You know, you can't go wrong trusting a very clutch guy named Brandon. So we have one of the best kickers in the league. So
we already talked about Trent Sieg as well. So, you know, we got two of the three special teamers covered.
And you know what? You know, and Brian Anger, obviously a very – he's still an elite punter. And then, you know, with the kickoff, the kickoff's coming back in the fold. You know, I'm curious to see what they're going to do with, you know, with Terp and, you know, and among others, because ours, you know, Deuce Vaughn can do it. There's some players on the roster, Ryan Flournoy, who, you know, I have to get one more Ryan Flournoy in there. Could be also a guy that could get some run on that new XFL style kickoff. I'm looking forward to it. I think from top to bottom, Cowboys look great. And God forbid, you know, I'm not wishing anything bad, but we are deep at the quarterback position this year. I really, you know, if Trey Lance has a really good preseason, that I think he will, the Cowboys are in good shape. So, like, and here's the thing. Yeah. Cooper Rush could be a practice squad guy. We could have three really good quarterbacks where Cooper Rush is that – I think Cooper Rush and Trey Lance are going to flip roles this coming year. I think Cooper Rush will be the guy where he's like the emergency three. And you have Dak Prescott and Trey Lance as your two quarterbacks. I think we're in a good spot. I'm excited for this year.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to just slide right on by that part because I'm not going to touch it. Like, you know, we've already – God, we've done this like a million times by now. Yeah, no, I'm not taking the bait. Nice try.
But, I try.
No, I'll look, I appreciate the enthusiasm for the Cowboys. I'm not quite there yet. I will say, so I have the Giants bottom, fourth in the NFC East. I think that's obvious. I have the Commanders third. I don't think they're as close to second place as Chris does, but I think I wouldn't be entirely shocked if they're putting up a good fight for second in the NFC East. But I don't see it at this point. Maybe next year. I do have the Cowboys at second, largely because, one, like we talked about with the pressure for the Eagles, Cowboys got some pressure in that locker room. Dak Prescott's in the last year of his deal. CeeDee Lamb's in the last year of his deal. Micah Parsons, not really in the last year of his deal, but kind of. Mike McCarthy, Mike Zimmer, Paul Gunther, like all these coaches going to the last.
Hold on a second. I don't mean to cut you off, but last time I checked, pressure can make diamonds. And last time I checked, Super Bowl rings are made out of diamonds.
Yes, sir. Yes, they are. But also, not too long ago, actually 10 years ago, so kind of long, the 49ers were in a very similar situation with Jim Harbaugh. And everyone was saying, man, this could be the last year. Man, it might not be, even though all he did was go to the playoffs, all he did was win. And Jim Harbaugh, a year later, was not coaching the 49ers. And I don't want to say that that's going to be what the Cowboys are this year. But it also, I mean, and Jim Harbaugh is like, of all the coaches you could think to like just ignore the noise and like, ah, we're not, like, we're just going to go out there and win. But Jim Harbaugh is the guy. And he couldn't even ignore it. So, you know, Mike McCarthy, like, I like the guy. I'm rooting for the guy. But also, that's a lot of pressure to put on a coach and a quarterback that don't know where they're going to be next year. For a team that, at least on paper, got slightly worse from last year, just from looking at the guys that they lost relative to who they gained, and also relative to who the other teams in their division gained versus lost. I mean, half the team went to the Commanders, for God's sakes. Like, you know, so I'm very much a believer. And for all my belief in analytics, I'm a believer in like certain trends that have just lasted forever. Like for the longest time, no team ever hosted their own Super Bowl. And I got to a point where I was like, I would look at who's hosting and say, well, there's no chance they're going to be good this year. Similarly, like it's been forever since we had a repeat NFC East champion. And I'm just a believer that like, it's not going to happen. Like I would be thrilled if the Cowboys broke that streak. But just by virtue of that, I'm like, nope. Cowboys, I don't know who's going to win the NFCs, but I feel confident that it won't be the Cowboys. But I do think they're good enough to win a wild card berth, get to the playoffs, because they are a playoff team. If they're not going to the playoffs, then they better be making a change somewhere on the coaching staff, be making significant changes throughout the organization. But, yeah, I do have the Eagles in first, just because if it's not the Cowboys, they're the most logical – you know, next best team. Also, I'm looking at their schedule. 5 of their last 6 games are at home. Or, no, sorry, I can't do math. 4 of their last 5 are at home. Still a good amount. And, like, it's not exactly tough teams. They play the Panthers in Week 14. They play the Steelers in Week 15. Then they go on the road to Washington, who, you know, may or may not be good. They do host the Cowboys, which is a tough opponent, but it's in Philly in December, the end of December. And then they got the Giants in Week 18. So, like, you got 4 home games in your last 5 weeks. They should be winning at least 4 of those games, if not all 5. And you end the season on a 5-game win streak, you're probably going to be in a good spot. With 3 of those against division foes, you're in a good spot to lock up the division title. So, I look at that and I think like the Eagles and Cowboys, I don't think there's a whole lot of daylight between the two of them as teams. So yeah, you can hear me maybe kind of like struggling to get that out, but I have the number 1 in the NFC East. God, I hope I'm wrong, because I hate seeing them be.
I think you will be. It's fine.
Well, fingers crossed. Maybe this is reverse psychology. But that's where those four teams stand for me and Brandon. Maybe next week we'll have Chris on and he can give a brief recap of his. We know he loves Dan Quinn, so he probably has the Commanders number 1 overall, or you know, 1 Jalen Brooks away from being 1 overall. But we'll see. We'll see next week. So make sure you come back next week to find out, and hopefully get all 3 of us back together, because I miss the Three Musketeers, the Holy Trinity, whatever else we want to call ourselves. But thank you for being along this week and listening to me and Brandon go back and forth. And, you know, come back next week and we'll have more Cowboys content. As always, we'll keep you rolling all through the offseason. And pretty soon we'll be in Oxnard, not the 3 of us, and maybe travel plans, I don't know. But Cowboys will be in Oxnard and we'll have training camp content to talk through. So Until next week, I'm David Hellman signing off for Brandon Clemens. And remember, go Cowboys.